Welcome to A New Lens with Comma Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIA, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Comma Good Capital. I'm here with Ron Cortez, a 30-year veteran of the investment industry. He's co-founder and former CEO of AssetMark and a co-author of The Art of Investing. 2006, Ron launched his family foundation. He has since focused on impact investing, which obviously we're going to get into today, and social entrepreneurship. One of the things I'd love to say, Ron, is you welcomed me into the impact industry over 5 years ago, and I'm so grateful for the direction and encouragement that you've personally given to me. So with that, Ron, welcome, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. One of the things I really enjoy doing is bringing talented folks over from the other side of the investment space. So it was great to have you join, and it's been fun to see all the things you've done since.
So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you a series of questions. So feel free to answer as freely and honestly as you can. The first one is, give us a little background of yourself so that we can understand who you are and what you bring to the table.
Sure. So I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Middle-class family, first in my family to actually attend college. So I attended college at UC Berkeley, ended up meeting my wife there, been married now for 31 years. And it was a typical situation where I worked my way through school, graduated on a Friday, had a job on a Monday, and got started in the financial advisory business. And this was 1981. It was a very different business back then. It was all commissions. The concept of fee-based really didn't exist at the time. And I had the good fortune of working in a firm with a couple of other guys my age. We ended up by our late 20s having an opportunity to have an ownership interest in this advisory firm and really being at the forefront of the movement from commissions to fees. And we just saw that as where the industry was moving. And so we began to build out a fee-based platform for our own financial advisory practice because it didn't exist. There wasn't anyone out there that could really help us. And out of that, kind of the tail wagging the dog was that this fee-based platform that we built for ourselves ended up becoming very attractive to other advisors who were knocking on our door saying, like, we want to do what you do. And so by the early 1990s, we made the decision to sell our advisory practice and devote all of our energies to building out what really became kind of one of the first TAMPs, turnkey asset management platforms in the industry. And we had the good fortune of just riding a wave. And that company became AssetMark. We had our first, took some private equity capital in the early 2000s to grow the business. And when we had our first major liquidity event in 2006, my wife and I used that opportunity to create a family foundation. And I made the decision in 2008 to step back significantly from the business. And really kind of my objective was to launch my second act. I stayed on board. I stayed with AssetMark as a director and executive co-chair through 2016. Now the firm's public, which is terrific to see. It's kind of the child that I helped birth has grown up and become a fully grown adult, which is great. But so if you'd have asked me, Jeff, 15 years ago, when my wife and I started the foundation, like where I'd be in 2020, I probably would have said, hey, I would have moved from the investment world to philanthropy. And while it's true, we do a lot of grant work and we support a lot of cool projects off of our grants budget in the foundation, I really didn't have any idea. It was serendipity that this foray into our charitable foundation ended up kind of getting me back into the world of investing.
Okay. All right. So let's stop for a second. And obviously you're doing a lot of things today. You've done a lot of stuff, but how would you best describe who you are today in the context of your life journey?
Well, I think of myself, I spend a lot of time with folks talking about second acts, talking about this kind of journey from success to significance. So I feel like I'm climbing a different mountain now than I climbed in my 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to use some of the resources that first mountain provided, frankly, to do some things and to solve some problems and to address some issues that I would say were probably always important to me, but it was really philanthropy and kind of addressing the big problems of the world was something that I had always hoped I'd be able to do. My wife was really the one who drove all of our philanthropy back when I was running the business. And so it's been really neat now to create a family foundation and kind of be able to step back and say, okay, what do I care about? And what are some of the needles that I'd like to move in the world if I could? And, you know, what skills do I have to be able to do it? You know, and I joke, I feel like I'm not good at many things. Like if you were a Habitat for Humanity homeowner, you wouldn't want me building your home, right? I don't know one side of a hammer from another. I've never been a tech guy. So while we built some technology at AssetMark, I was really, you know, I don't really understand and appreciate like which technology is necessarily most effective. So I've always been a finance investment person. So for me, the opportunity has been, how do I use capital to try to solve big problems? And that's gotten me actually even back into the wealth management space of how do I help other people deploy their capital in the same way and help kind of build a system that enables that to become more mainstream in the wealth management business.
So let me drill in one layer deeper here. I was going to ask you how you're trying to change the world, which you can answer that question. But I want to caveat that and say, look, not all of us have a family foundation. And so in the context of that, let's say somebody like myself who doesn't have a family foundation, what are you doing in the context of changing the world for families like the Schaefer family, as an example, so that we can somehow get into what you're doing, but I'm never going to have however much money to grant, let's just say.
So my journey in impact investing in the Family Foundation started just, I call it a combination of opportunity and frustration. I saw these really cool entrepreneurs that needed capital that wasn't grant capital. They needed investment capital. And we had this foundation and we were only giving away 5% a year. And 95% of it was meant to just be traditionally invested. And so I kind of said, what could we do with the other 95%? And that led to us investing off of our balance sheet and realizing that that was a pretty cool way to kind of complement philanthropy. So one of the things that I'm most proud of being involved with is this organization called Impact Assets, which is a donor advised fund. So to your question of how do you democratize this opportunity, there today are hundreds of billions of dollars in donor advised funds from folks that have put in as little as $5,000, you know, $5,000, $50,000, $100,000, or more, and have used that as a really cool vehicle to grant money to organizations. So this organization I helped create in 2010, Impact Assets, was the first donor advised fund to empower people to say you can not only grant, but also invest. So it would give a typical family, let's say, that would otherwise have a donor advised fund, it may be Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard, the opportunity to use their fund to make investments off of. And what I learned was that for a lot of people, getting into impact investing using a philanthropic vehicle was kind of an interesting way to put a toe in the water, right? Because it was money that was already dedicated for a mission. There's lots of people that use donor advised funds at the end of the year. Maybe they put $10,000 in it at the end of the year and then decide how to give it away. Well, our pitch at Impact Assets is, as you're thinking about how to give that away, think about how you might be able to invest some of it as well to basically further the same mission, try to solve the same problem as the grants that you're getting.
You've answered this a little bit, but see if you can almost answer this from a personal story, if you have this. When did you personally realize the power of capital? It's a very broad, open-ended question.
Yeah, it's an open-ended question, but I'll laser focus on one particular day, November 1st of 2008. It was my second trip to Africa. I was there with a group of business people and academics. We were in this little village in Uganda called Bayobo, and we were there to visit this microfinance program that we provided seed capital to 20 women, widows in the village, who with the help of some women in the U.S., that was our connection of how we even got to know them, had built this little microfinance program, right? So we were the first people there from the US to visit them. And we're walking around this village, talking to these women who had created businesses with $200, $250 loans. And this one woman, I now know her name is Rose Maduku, she kept coming up and kind of pulling, tugging at my shoulder that she had something she wanted to say. So we get to her business, which was basically buying used clothing from the big city and then mending it, repairing it, selling it in her village. We brought over a translator. And what she said to me, I've never forgotten. She said, we appreciate when you, people from the US, come to Uganda to save our children, but we need to save our own children. Thank you for investing in us so we can do that. Still gives me shudders when I, you know, down my spine when I think about it, because what she was really saying is, like, we appreciate philanthropy, but what we really need is investors, right? So the fact that I was investing capital in her was something that put us on a level playing field, right? It wasn't something patronizing. It wasn't like I was giving, saying, well, you're worthy of my charity. It's like, no, you're worthy of an investment. And she's basically saying, I'm going to pay you back and you can take that money, which we totally did, and recycle it. Today, that little program called the Women's Microfinance Initiative, huge success story. We were only one of the people involved in the beginning, but it went from 20 women to now 12,000 women. Wow. Across four countries, fully self-sustainable, still run by the same group of women. A woman named Olive Wawumba runs it in the little village of Bayubo. And so for me, the lightning bolt that went off for me was that, you know, here's this thing that I've been involved with 30 years, investing money, putting capital to work. And the lightning bolt was, how could I do that for a million women, right? How could I help build programs and funds and investments and catalyze that capital? And so came back to the US at the end of 2008. I pretty much stepped aside. I found a successor CEO at AssetMark. I was on a track for about 6 months to step aside. I actually moved that up. And by the end of 2008, which was a tough, I mean, as you so well know, mm-hmm. Jeff, was a very tough year in the investment world. I was kind of moving. So as I started 2009, that was my focus. That was the germination of starting Impact Assets, which we launched in 2010, taking our foundation from what had been 20% impact and moving it up to ultimately 100, and basically saying, like, how do you use capital to change the world? Microfinance made sense to me as a really interesting starting point, because I understood the dynamics of how important capital was to small business people. So today I sit on a $300 million microfinance fund that I chair the board. We provide capital to the banks that provide capital to the Florence Madukus of the world. And it's just been a cool journey to say, how do you deploy capital in ways that can really have a double bottom line?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things you talk about is obviously the impact that you're having on that woman in Africa, for example. But just listening to you talk, and I've experienced this personally, is the impact that you personally have got to benefit by seeing your capital go to help others. And so if I were to look at my own life in this impact investing, I am very intrigued about what investing this way does to the heart and psyche of the investor. Yes, obviously the impact that what it does to the individuals who receive the capital or the benefit from it, but there's this really powerful side on the other side. So to that point, not everybody makes money, is successful, and then turns around and uses it to benefit others. So, you know, how and what has shaped your view of stewardship? I mean, what does stewardship mean to you? I get a sense just talking to you, but I'd love if you could articulate a little bit more.
So I would say my view of stewardship has really expanded in this second act that I've been in. I feel like, you know, I live my first act as a fiduciary, right? We were responsible for handling people's money at AssetMark and took that role incredibly seriously as fiduciaries and saw ourselves as stewards of folks' retirement income and the income they were saving, you know, the assets they were setting aside for their kids and all that stuff. But now I've really taken it to the next level, which says, I think that we're all responsible for how our resources are deployed in society. And I think that the wealth management business is more fully beginning to appreciate that people care about this. They care about what type of legacy they not only want to leave, but also live. I joked at a conference a couple of years ago that when I started the business, legacy planning was something that always occurred feet first, right? It was always something that the idea of legacy planning was, okay, well, where do you want your assets to go after you're dead? And to your earlier point, there's nothing I've done in my life that's been more satisfying mm-hmm. than some of the impact investments that we've been involved with. And so I say to people, you know, you've got an opportunity to create a legacy that you can live as well as leave, right? You can hopefully leave it to your next generation. You can leave assets, et cetera. But there's an opportunity to derive an enormous amount of satisfaction from being an effective steward of your own capital, number one. And I've kind of taken it maybe to the next level of saying, okay, as someone who's been a fiduciary for years, I've been trying to help the wealth management space and other advisors think about how can you be a more effective steward of your clients' capital? Mm-hmm. And take them on this journey that all of the research says they want to go on. But often the biggest impediment to going on that journey is the fact that the advisor's not ready to go on and get. And so how do you educate yourself and how do you become aware of the opportunities so that you can create the right connections for your clients? The kind of icing on the cake of my argument to advisors is not only is this amazing stewardship that will benefit the world, will deepen your client relationships, but it's actually an incredible business opportunity. Yeah. Because you're truly skating to where the puck is going. And by differentiating your practice in this way, I'm convinced that you're actually building a more sustainable, more effective business.
Well, you and I obviously are aligned because I'm sitting back here saying preach it. I couldn't agree more. I love hearing somebody else articulate it. One of the things that I've talked about, and we don't need to have a discussion on this, but you may have some thoughts, is, you know, we talk about fiduciary, and let me just talk from a layman's term. That's more of a legal term. And to me, it's like, what's the difference between fiduciary and stewardship? And stewardship to me has a similar dynamic, but to me is even a higher level. It's not just about my fiduciary responsible to this investor, but it's also a broader stakeholder group. So I've been toying with it, but I love the idea of stewardship as an expansion of the fiduciary role, and to think of people thought about planning, not only as being a fiduciary, but a steward holistically. I mean, that's why we named ourselves Common Good, but I think there's some interesting dialogue in that. I don't know if you have any thoughts or comments about that.
It's a great point. I mean, honestly, while there are some similarities, as I think about it, a fiduciary is really about how do I do the right thing by you and your money, where stewardship is how do we think about your role and your resources and your money relative to your community,
yep. Right?
Relative to something bigger than yourself.
Yep.
It's ironic that while there's a lot of parallels between the two, that fiduciary role I found, and I'd love to get your opinion, sometimes tends to get in the way of stewardship, meaning yep. that advisors, when they're first approached by a client who brings in a clipping on some type of impact investment, oftentimes the advisor who isn't really informed about these things kind of steps back and says, wait a minute, you know, I'm a fiduciary of your assets. You know, we got to make as much as we can. You might give away, do something in philanthropy here, but they use that fiduciary role very narrowly defined to prevent them from having the stewardship conversation with the client that I'm convinced the client wants to have. And not only isn't it like contradictory with fiduciary, but I think the two kind of come together, right? You obviously, the way I look at it with a client's assets is, you know, you've got certain things that you want to protect, whether it's your lifestyle in retirement, whether it's your grandkids' educations, whether it's how you want to provide for your family, et cetera. But a lot of folks today are in the fortunate position working with advisors where they have additional resources beyond that. And there's, I think, a growing recognition that there's a responsibility to society that comes with stewardship, right? And how yeah. do you, and there's things you care about that you can truly make a difference in. And literally I've had clients say to me, well, why wouldn't I do that, right? Why is my advisor trying to prevent me from doing that, right? It's not like I'm taking money. And the whole concept now of saying that, you know, for wealthy folks, I don't want my kids to have everything, right? I want my kids to, you know, I love the Warren Buffett line, right? I want to give my kids enough that they can do anything they want, but not enough that they can do nothing at all. And find that that's often, you know, and families want to instill in their kids and grandkids values, right? And one of the ways to help instill values is to use philanthropic vehicles or to use investment strategies and to engage the next generation in here's how we're investing our capital and here's the things we care about as a family, and bring them into what they care about as well.
Well, I could go on about 12 different tangents. I'll make one comment. You know, you just look at where we are in the U.S. and the world for that matter. You've got the election coming up. There's tons of heat going back and forth around that. You've got COVID. You've got all this stuff. And one of the things that we're seeing, and one of the things that I love about impact investing is it's not rhetoric. You get to make a decision and you get to put capital to actually try to make a difference. And you can watch it. You can watch if it worked from an impact perspective. You can watch it work if from a financial perspective. And one of the shocking things that I've been so pleasantly surprised is that my journey on this impact investing, it is much more about innovation and creativity than I would have ever imagined. Most people enter this discussion and say, oh, I got to give up return. And sure, there are certain things that it's not market rate. But there are some other highly innovative, creative structures that actually can really help solve problems today. And I won't go into those, but at some point, as we do more podcasts, we'll talk about it, whether it's social impact bonds, whether it's opportunity zones. This is a timely discussion. All right, I'm going to end with this. This is, again, totally open-ended question. If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, we have perhaps the most satisfying thing for me out of this entire journey is that our daughter has gotten involved in the process. She's 30 now. She's about 7 years ago decided to come aboard our family foundation. She now co-chairs it with our son-in-law, who actually worked in the family foundation, which is how they met. And so with one child and with a son-in-law who I consider a son, we've got our next generation very much involved in leading this, which has just been extraordinary. And so I think that if I have one dream in life, it's for the grandkids that don't yet exist, hint, 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 Steph and Eric, for the grandkids that are to come, we, my wife and I, would love to see them being engaged as the next generation in whatever it is that as they grow up, that they determine are the problems in the world that they want to solve.
Well, I am convinced that one of the things that we need in this world is people who not only look at themselves, but look outside of themselves and how their actions, the time, the talent, the treasures that they use is impacting the greater good, the common good. And if we can get there, and if impact investing is one of the ways to get people pointed in that way, then I think there's real hope for not only America, but for the world. So this is an exciting journey to be on. Well, we appreciate your insight, and I've enjoyed your friendship. Your knowledge and your willingness to share has been phenomenal, not only today, but the last 5 years. Thank you so much, Ron, for joining us.
Can I give you a shout out as well?
Sure.
You know, since I got into this space fairly early, almost 15 years ago, I've had the opportunity to have lots of people from traditional investing world who have kind of come to me and said, hey, tell me more about this. And you were one of them. I'm thinking back. It was 5 or 6 years ago that we met at one of those traditional industry CEO conferences. Mm-hmm. And somehow we got connected and you said, hey, could I buy you a cup of coffee for an hour in New York, Upper East Side? I still remember. And that meeting was very similar to a lot of other meetings I've had, right? Where I could just tell you had a level of excitement. This was something you wanted to do. But what's different with you and dozens of other people I met with is that within a very short amount of time after that, you were doing it. I remember you called me up and you said, I'm doing it. I'm leaving my prior firm. I'm going to commit myself to this. I'm going to create a company. And you spent the time to kind of figure out where the opportunity was. It's just been great to have you as part of the space, man.
Well, thank you. And looking forward to doing more. I think we've talked, well, you knew about this. One of my passions has been working with men and women who've been incarcerated. So just recently have made some investments personally in businesses run by formerly incarcerated men and women with the idea that one day, once I get that experience, that we'll roll out a fund along that genre, kind of a second chance fund. So that would be a pinnacle to my career if we can get that done. So we'll just pray that it does.
Terrific.
Yeah. So anyways, with that, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to more fulfilling portfolios within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. Ron, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.